The Earth of Yunhee by Eric Gregory is the opening story of Shine, an anthology of near-future, optimistic science fiction, edited by Jetze DeVries and published by Solaris Books. It's available through major book chains in the US like Barnes & Noble and Borders, major book chains in the UK like W.H. Smith's and Waterstones, and online through Amazon. But also, you can find it in independent channels like Powell's Books, IndieBound, The Book Depository, and Books a Million. Search for Shine Anthology at any of those retailers. And now, to our podcast. The Earth of Yunhee by Eric Gregory, as narrated by Kate Baker. Silent. Drafted blind worms burrow, decomposing, circles closing, garbage eating, circles meeting, biocrafted Ouroboros. Rajan Khanna. I raised my arms for inspection, but old Zhu laughed and waved me past. He was a flushed, avuncular man who had spent his entire life with a book of dirty jokes in his pocket. As far as anyone knew, he never once touched a woman, and he didn't upset the tradition for me. Little Yunhee rarely had need for a jailer, so Zhu was perfect for the job. He sat in his rusted fold-out chair on the deck of the patient whale and shouted friendly curses to the fishermen who docked nearby. He was thrilled to have a prisoner now. It gave him an excuse to load his pistol. But he treated the entire affair as an excellent joke.
"Boy's crazy," the old man called behind me. "You watch him."
"Oh, I'll watch him, Zhu."
"I tell you, one of these days he'll break down the door."
My brother was crazy, no question about that. But I'd known three-legged cats who were more dangerous. Xiao Hao was only a hazard to himself. I made my slow way down the whale's steep stairwell, clutched the rails in case a step fell out beneath me. Most of these old boats were mere breaths from death, and the whale wasn't exactly rigorously maintained. The jail was lit by a single yellow bulb. I strode down the hall of open doors to the lone locked cell at the end, and my shadow pitched across the walls like a drunk. There was a tripod stool outside Xiao Hao's door. I rapped twice on the thick metal and sat down. After an uncertain moment of silence, I heard my brother stir on the other side. He shuffled around for another minute, grunting quietly, then peered at last through his small, barred window. He wasn't fat, but his face had filled out during his years with the Ecclesia. His left eye was red, encircled by an ugly bruise that had only gone uglier since the last time I visited him. Xiao Hao sighed.
"Father still won't see me?"
"No, not unless you're twitching on the end of a pike." Exaggeration, of course, but not so very far from the truth. His face fell, and I regretted the words instantly. Idiot that he was, Xiao Hao hadn't expected Papa's anger, or hadn't expected it to be so prodigious anyway. He supposed that Yunhee would welcome him back as a savior, that Papa would forgive him in light of his bright, shining genius. My brother had always been a master fantasist. He gripped the bars, stared at his feet. "Any word from the administrators?" The question was quiet, hopeless. He didn't sound like he wanted to know the answer.
"No, but they're going to let you out."
"Are they really, Yuan?" He smiled bitterly. "Are you sure? I think they might put me on a pike, call it an early birthday gift for our father."
I leaned forward on the stool. "Xiao, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said..."
"Forget about it."
"No, listen, I'm sorry. I'm not the one stuck in here, and I shouldn't joke. But I swear to you, Xiao, no one's going to kill you. You're still a Yunhe boy. They're not going to execute one of their own just because he makes an ass of himself in the square. His eyes narrowed. You may not have noticed, but this isn't Yunhe. It is now. I tapped my foot on the steel floor. This is what's left.
No, he said. It's not. He hadn't been in Yunhe when the ash flood came, but the wound was fresher in Xiao Hao's heart than anyone else's. Perhaps because he hadn't been there. The rest of us had saved what we could, fished out our dead, and slowly, painfully, moved on. Made new lives in this make-do city. But Xiao had congenital difficulties with the concept of moving on. Neither of us spoke. I cracked my fingers. It had been a mistake to come here. I'd only wanted to see that he was still okay, well-fed. Xiao looked back into the darkness of his cell and raked his fingers through thin, short hair. You have to get me out of here, he said at last.
You know I can't do that. The fuck you can't. Pull the key off the codger upstairs. He won't even notice. Shoo?
I couldn't stop myself. I laughed.
You think they give him a key? Shoo might as well be your manservant. He's just here to bring you lunch.
Realization worked across Xiao's face. He hadn't known. He'd honestly believed that Zhu could give him his freedom. I wondered how long he'd spent begging the old man. Xiao Hao turned away from the window, rubbed his eyes with his thumb and forefinger.
Shit, he said.
Shit. He kicked something I couldn't see, something large and metallic, crashed to the floor.
Xiao, I started.
Sedition, Yuan. He turned back toward the window. His eyes were wet. I'm glad you think the administrators won't carry out the sentence. That's really heartening. But you are going to stake my life on it? These people are savages. This whole shithole city. Chomping at the ghost of the hard fucking state. When was the last time you heard a syllable from Beijing? When was the last time you got a truck full of vaccines? There's no such thing as sedition anymore. I sat very still.
This is why you're here, I said quietly.
Because I tell the truth?
Because you don't understand your own people. Because you didn't bother to learn about this place, didn't care enough to ask about our new lives. Just stuck your head in the door and told us to drop everything because what we'd built was worthless. You expect people to trust you, to follow you? You disappeared, Xiao, and you waited too long to come back.
I held his gaze for a long moment, then stood and walked back toward the stairs. The whale shifted on the water and my shadow shuddered across the wall. I reached the first of the dark, creaky steps before Xiao Hao called out to me. The password, he said, his voice tight. It's garden. I spent most of the morning in Little Wuxi. Their accumulator was down, and their administrators were frantic. All five of the gray, yammering men wanted to peer over my shoulder as I checked out the battery, the tanks, the pipes. Their anxiety was as exhausting as it was unnecessary. One accumulator wouldn't make or break the city's weather control. Finally, I asked them to leave, told them that their ambient body heat might damage the components. They left me alone. Slowly, carefully, I extracted the tower's guts. The morning was hot, and I was thankful for the sea breeze that played around me. Many of the central wires had started to rust. Not so badly that the whole accumulator should break down, but it would become more of a problem as time wore on. I'd seen the same thing in some of the other towers. These were old machines. I wiped the sweat from my face with my forearm, watched the gulls wheel above. The birds were probably waiting for me to leave.
They liked to perch on the seaside accumulators and watch the water.
The upper halves of the machine's black metal hulls were always spattered with white. Maybe, I thought, just maybe. I hauled out the battery cradle and inspected it from every side. Nothing out of the ordinary. Then, with the steadiest hands I could summon, I pulled the battery out of the cradle, and there was the culprit. A layer of bird shit covered the receptor prongs. Either one gull had eaten a catastrophically disagreeable meal, or the entire flock regularly squirted their lunches with vicious precision. I cleaned up the receptor, tucked the various wires back into their racks, and shoved the cradle back into the tower. The accumulator's black skin began to thrum at once. The Wuxi administrators were overjoyed, embarrassingly so. They thrust iced jackfish and rice wine into my hands, overwrought thanks that little Wuxi could hardly afford. As much as they plainly appreciated my help, I doubted this was the standard engineer's honorarium. These men knew my father's name. I thanked each in turn, accepted the gifts graciously, and made to leave at the earliest opportunity. But the senior administrator, a fox-faced man named Hu, raised his hand to stop me.
"One more token of our thanks," he said,
and produced a small, foldable Wymo from his pocket. No more than 2 or 3 years old by the look of it. The surface was only gently scratched and the solar cells seemed to work. Hu powered up the device as tenderly as one might wake a baby.
"We've recently had a trader from Shangdu," he said. "I give you this on behalf of all of Wuxi."
I unconsciously tongued the month-old unit in the roof of my mouth. It broadcasted at terabytes per second to the contacts in my eyes, responded to minute tongue gestures and sub-vocalized commands. Yunhe had also had the trader from Shangdu. Papa commanded reverence even from outsiders. "Thank you," I said, and accepted the Wymo. The walk back to little Yunhe was long and hot and awkward. Foolishly, I took the boardwalk, which bustled with fishermen and hungry dockside homeless. Most either knew my name or felt no compulsion to harass me, but more than one boat hand trailed his leer with a whistle or reached out to smack my ass. Jokes and arguments played out around me in a dozen tongues, Korean, Filipino, Mongolian, Thai. Some of the jokes were opaque to me. Others were all too understandable. The eyes of the homeless flicked up from their decade-old gray market Wymos to follow the bundle of treasures in my arms. My cheeks flushed, and the sun bore down, and finally I couldn't bear the stares. I put down the jackfish and walked swiftly away. Papa would be angry if he learned that I'd given away honoraria, but I kept the rice wine and the Wymo, so he would likely never know. Unless the little Wuxi administrators asked whether he enjoyed the fish. I pulled the Wymo out of my pocket, unfolded it. The translucent sheet overlaid the walk before me with a few simple icons and live feeds. Clock, calendar, local temperature. My roof of the mouth unit noticed the new machine and prompted me to link the devices for file transfer and load share. I declined. I'd gotten the same prompt at home every morning for the past week. There was a new computer somewhere in the flat, one my father didn't want to talk about. The password, I thought. It's garden. He came to us with promises of dirt. I was outside of the city that day, checking up on the outermost ring of accumulators. But I saw the whole mess on the network once it was over. I saw it from every angle, through the beady eyes of 24 different Wymo cameras. On some impulse that I didn't quite understand, I brought up the most popular video now. Xiaohao strode into Little Yunhe Square, right up to the administrator's Quonset hut offices. He wore the black skin weave favored by the ecclesia, likely the first of his many mistakes, and waved his arms like an attention-starved child. "It's time to return to our ancestral home," he shouted. Xiao had never been a very good public speaker. He compensated for anxiety with breathtaking pompousness. "The day is today. The hour is this hour. Follow me and we'll raise Yunhe from new soil." With each word, more and more of the square's homeless raised their Wymos to record the madman's performance. Two security officers outside of the Quonset hut exchanged uncertain glances and advanced cautiously, hands on the butts of their pistols. "New soil!" Xiao Hao cried again. "Smart soil from the Ecclesia soil to reclaim Yunhe, the real Yunhe, from the ash. I'm giving this to you. We will build it together. Look! Explore!" That last bit made no sense. Did he carry some of the magic dirt in his hand? Xiao went silent as something approached from off-screen. The camera jerked to one side, zoomed in on the little Yunhe administrators as they emerged from their offices. Papa, dressed in his trademark gray suit, took the lead. "Father," said Xiao, barely audible now, "I've brought..." Papa moved faster than the Wymo filmmaker could follow. When the camera found him again, the old man stood over his son, who was crumpled on the ground, clutching his face. "I'm giving this to you!" screamed Xiao, and Papa reared back to kick him in the gut. I couldn't watch any further. My fingers shook as I folded up the Wymo. Could I really say that Papa wouldn't kill him? I'd winced when I saw the video for the first time, but assumed the worst was over. After all, Xiao Hao hadn't been the first criminal beaten by our father, and little Yunhe had never executed anyone before. My brother had come here practically wrapped in the flag of the Ecclesia. Of course Papa would show him hard justice, give him a week or two win the whale. But he wouldn't kill his own son. Would he? I tried to call Papa, got no response. Then I began to jog. Xiao's words played over and over again in my head. "Are you sure? I think they might put me on a pike." I cut through the little Xiang Zheng tent quarter, which was quiet except for a handful of eateries. The smell of fried onion wafted from solar walks. I should have been hungry, but the thought of food made me nauseous. The route through the tent quarter was shorter, but Zheng Sheng had suffered a milder disaster than Yunhe, and its detritus was stacked outside of every tent. Bookshelves, defunct television, stainless steel cages, coffee makers' lamps, the stems of wine glasses. Leftovers of another dead town clogging the veins of the refugee city. Twice I had to leap over fallen stacks of boxes, and once I nearly toppled an old woman selling reusable cigarettes. Finally, the ways widened and the tents thinned. A squad of security officers in old, weathered hard suits stood along the border of the Yunhe tent quarter. They tensed as I approached, and then relaxed when they saw my face. The squad leader nodded his respect. Papa might have been in the administrator's offices, or he might have been in bed. Both huts were inland, but home was closer. I glanced across the water at the whale and picked up my pace, drawing a dozen confused gazes in my wake as I jogged towards our house on the hill. The door was locked. I groped for my keys, shoved the door open, and stumbled inside where a dozen rattling fans twisted around to cool me. The lights were off and the doors between each partition were open. In the study, Papa's favorite dishes lay dirty on his desk, and a yellowed novel sat half-open on his seat. I was certain now that he wasn't home, but I called out his name nonetheless, an impropriety that would have earned me a lecture in the best of times. There was no response. I hissed a curse and made to leave, then stopped short. The smart fan squeaked, surprised by my sudden stillness. On my eyelid, the prompt flashed. "Link to device Xie Xie for data transfer." the same prompt I'd gotten every day for the past week. I wasn't sure where Papa had hidden Xiao Hao's Waimo, but that didn't matter, did it? I was in range. I agreed to link, and Xiao's unit asked me for a password. Garden, I said. The world changed. I had only fleeting memories of my grandfather's garden, but those scraps were vivid. Sunflowers like bright, tremendous trees, the space beneath their canopy a secret yellow sanctuary. I squatted in the soil with my worn, creaky kitty until Xiao, a few years older, fell onto me in a spray of dirt and battle cries. He whipped the stalks of the great golden flowers with some uprooted weed, set me wailing out of the garden to the farm proper. I got lost in endless rows of sour gum, and when I found Papa at last, he nearly beat me for running out of sight. Now I stood in the garden again. Sunflowers towered over my head, 5 or 6 meters tall, brighter than ever, brighter even than the flowers of memory. Birds chirped somewhere just out of sight. Up the hill between the stalks, I could see my grandfather's house, intact and even renovated. Yunhee, the real Yunhee, back from the dead. This can't be fake, I thought. Sims always left me with this jarring sense of absolute credulity. The Waimo fed me my home through the roof of my mouth, and I couldn't help but believe it. This can't be fake, I thought, though I knew that it was. I can smell the dirt. I made my way out of the canopy of monster flowers and gasped. Oh, Xiao, I murmured, and struggled to remind myself that nothing here was real or meaningful, that my home was still buried beneath the black flood. Grandfather's house was beautiful and larger than it had ever been in real life, a multi-wing, three-story complex with something like an observation deck on the roof. I followed a stone path flanked by more traditionally proportioned blue roses from the garden to the house. The front door was unlocked and I stepped inside. It wasn't the home I remembered. Somehow it was more than a home, the idea of grandfather's place writ large. There was space for dozens in the dining room, seats arrayed around 3 beautiful wooden tables. On the ground floor alone, there were 2 kitchens, a full bar, and a game room. Xiao had connected a library to grandfather's study. Papa's favorite painting of the war above held a position of honor over the reading couch. The house's additional stories were given over to bedrooms, enough to sleep our entire extended family and several more families besides. It's a dormitory, I realized. Grandfather's house transformed into a dormitory. Was this how citizens of Ecclesia lived? Like wealthy college students? I took the elevator, to the roof. Lawn chairs encircled a small herb garden, and at each edge of the roof, telescopes gazed off into the distance. The day was preternaturally clear, no smoke, no fog, and not a single cloud in the sky. I could make out individual trees on the blue mountains that towered around Yunhee. If I wanted, I probably could have found the mountaintop waste lake that had laid my town to waste. Instead, I looked out across the Yunhee that Xiao Hao had made. His model world. As far as I could tell, there were no traditional homes here, and their place were a half a dozen more dormitory houses, each surrounded by vast tracts of vibrant farmland. Here and there in the fields stood enormous gleaming towers, new model accumulators hybridized with wind turbines. To the south, at a point roughly equidistant from each of the dormitories, I saw Xiao's vision of a town square. Open-air market, playground and pool, small restaurants, even an amphitheater. Everything was linked by a web of red brick paths. It was lovely. The gardens, the farms, everything was lovely. I shut down the sim,
Yunhee disappeared and I smelled the ocean again. Smart fans surrounded me in an eager semicircle, cooled me with a kind of mad mechanical enthusiasm. Ship's horn sounded in the distance. I took 3 swift, deep breaths, a trick I learned in college for exiting Sims as quickly as possible, and ran out the door. Somehow it was easier to believe in the real world with a full pair of lungs. The security officers outside of the administrator's offices were less genial than the ones on the border. They surely knew my face, but still they held their position in front of the door, and they neither smiled nor nodded. There was even a little smirking twist in the corner of the squad leader's mouth. My panic must have leaked out of my eyes, visible to everyone. "State your business," said the squad leader, plaintive and automatic. He was short, broad-shouldered, and wore a few days' stubble. I briefly wondered if I could force my way past him, gave up on the idea as quickly as I conjured it. Dozens of people decided that they had business with the administrators every day. Accusations of chicken theft or WIMO hacking, petitions for divorce or consolidation of tent space. This man's entire job was to stand in the way of desperate people's grievances. "I need to see my father," I said.
"Do you have an appointment?"
"He called me, asked me to come as quickly as possible."
"You won't mind if I confirm that," he said.
I smiled sweetly and said that I wouldn't mind at all. I had an understanding with Young, my father's secretary. The squad leader unfolded his WIMO, carried on an extremely short, sub-vocalized conversation with an invisible party, and then frowned.
"Go on, then," he muttered.
I stepped inside the Quonset hut. The place was sweltering. 2 parallel rows of secretaries glanced up from paper-plastered desks, every sweaty face transparently terrified that I had come to make more work. I found Papa in the back of the hut softly berating Young over something to do with ledgers. Young looked relieved to see me.
"Papa," I said, "may I speak to you in private?"
He raised an eyebrow but nodded, beckoned me to his office and closed the door. We sat on either side of his desk, and my eye flicked to the painting behind his head. A battle scene from the war above. Murmured arguments about fishing zones floated from the office next door. The partitions between offices were more of an affectation than a proof against sound. I spoke quietly.
"When will Xiao go free? He looks awful."
Papa sat back and sighed.
"Yuan, it's not clear that he will ever go free."
He didn't blink as he said it. His eyes were always wide and wary and unblinking, as if he'd never stopped looking down on the entire world at once, never given up the divine eye view from space. He ran one hand across his gray-black beard, which had only recently started to fill in.
"You know we can't look the other way on this suite. We'd countenance sedition and burn every scrap of our credibility all in one clean sweep. Xiao made his choices, and he's left us with none."
Goosebumps raised across my neck.
"So?" I said, barely a whisper. "You're going to kill him?"
Papa was silent. His face was utterly still, and he didn't blink.
"I want to show you something," I said, newly careful with every syllable. I didn't know how precarious a line I was walking anymore, and I couldn't be sure that Papa wouldn't throw me in the whale for collaboration. But I also couldn't let my brother die. I queued up the sim, prepared to send.
"If it's Xiao Hao's new Yunhee," said Papa, "I've seen it, and I don't want to see it again."
I froze. "You've seen?"
"He sent it to all of the administrators the day he came back."
"And you saw?" I said.
I felt clenched and cold.
"I saw enough."
"You saw the garden.
You saw the painting in the library.
Again, Papa was hard-eyed and silent and absolutely still, and I finally understood. I thought that he was furious with Xiao, disappointed and sore with wounded pride. But incredibly, terrifyingly, this wasn't a matter of emotion. It wasn't personal at all. Papa was unwilling to make it personal. He'd never been particularly traditional. He might have even forgiven Xiao for simply running away with a professor, even if the professor in question was male and Filipino and given to lectures on crowdsourcing micro-protest. Xiao's romances were a family matter, but he had fled to a meta-nation, and that made his choices the business of the state. That was defection. Dereliction, sedition. Papa couldn't forgive sedition.
His world means nothing, he said softly. It's fantasy, that's all.
I think Xiao believes he can make it real.
Your brother believes a lot of stupid things.
He stood with a grunt, finally turned his wide eyes away from me. You have a gentle heart. And I admire that. But today we can't be gentle.
I trust you're smart enough not to be moved by other people's stupidities.
I struggled to make my face as opaque as his own. Yes, Papa, I said. My intentions must have leaked out of my eyes. I stood and opened the partition door, but Papa stopped me.
One more thing, sweet, he gripped my shoulder. You mustn't give away your honoraria. Word travels and it makes us appear ungrateful. Arrogant. We can't afford that kind of reputation at the moment. Do you understand?
He smiled his disarming smile. Yes, I said. I understood.
I flipped on my arc knife. The blade hissed and lit up the creaking death trap stairway of the whale, cast my skin in electric blue. I jumped past the last two steps and my landing echoed in rattling metal. There was no time for caution. It was time for knives. I'd stashed the tools in the soles of my shoes, but that proved unnecessary. Shu didn't give me trouble, didn't even ask me to pull out my pockets. I hoped he would be just as accommodating on our way out. We could cut through the hull if it came to that, but I didn't exactly relish the thought of sinking a ship while Xiao Hao and I were still inside. I hurried down the hall of open doors, swinging blue light at my side. Xiao's eyes appeared in the grate, bright first with panic and then confusion.
Yuan? What do you...
Step back, I said. As far back as you can go. He obeyed. I cleaved the thick padlock with one swipe, turned off the knife, and hauled open the heavy door. Inside, Xiao pressed himself flat against the far wall. He was dressed in a dirty undershirt and two small black pants. He looked stricken.
Yuan, he started. You were right, Xiao. I was wrong. We have to go.
He blanched.
They're going to kill me? I don't know. I have no idea what they'll do anymore.
I pulled off my left shoe, peeled open the sole, and drew out a second arc knife.
Take this.
Xiao frowned at the knife for a moment, then he took it.
What's your plan?
We leave the city, make for, I don't know, a real city. I have some money. Maybe we can go to your Eurclesia. If it comes to that, maybe...
Xiao's frown deepened. Your money's worthless, he said quietly. Well, goodbye.
He bit his lip and fiddled with the arc knife, flicked it on and sat down on the wireframe monstrosity that must have been his bed. He watched the blade burn and hiss.
Your money's worthless, he said.
And there's no going to Eurclesia. I pissed them off in order to come here.
You pissed them off?
He shook his head, sighed. Cursed under his breath. The knife light cast long shadows under his eyes.
Yuan, I hate it, and I thank you.
but I think I need to stay here. I opened my mouth, but no sound came. I know it's stupid, he said. His jaw was tight and his hand shook slightly. I know. Listen, I thought about what you said, how I came here without understanding the place or the people. You were right. Absolutely, awfully, irrefutably right. But now I know the mistakes I made, and I think I can make this work. If I run away, that's an admission of guilt. I lose every single scrap of credibility I ever had. 2 years of preparation, one furious metnat, and all for nothing. I have to try again, Yuan. If Papa's eyes seemed to see everything at once, Xiao's were perpetually fixed on the very heart and core of whatever he regarded. Father and son shared their intensity. The difference between them was a question of focus. He stared at me now and he didn't blink. I exhaled slowly. You should know, I said, that I am thinking very seriously about knocking you out and dragging you away. He snorted. Good luck. I have a thick skull. I sat down beside my brother, turned on my own knife once more. We'd always been the kind of kids who used dangerous industrial tools for candles. You'll never persuade Papa, I said. My mind raced to find the words that would persuade Xiao, but part of me already knew that those words didn't exist. First and worst mistake I made, he said, took my message to the top. I thought I needed Father's permission. I thought his permission would be enough. Stupid. I acted like this was some fucking hard state from the profligate time, some top-down institution. But that's backward, isn't it? I've got to start from the bottom. The people of Little Yunhe. I need your help, Yuan. I could see where this was going, and I felt what Papa must have felt as he blasted into the sky. The awful exhilaration of a physical law, a lifelong gravity falling out from underneath you. I'd come to free Xiao on a high of instinct and adrenaline. But could I really join him in active sedition? Could I make that choice and stand behind it? First, I said, my voice shaking only a little, you're going to have to explain some things. I saw your sim and it was beautiful, really, truly beautiful. But I still don't understand your big plan. I don't understand how you could bring Yuni back. Again, he frowned. Seriously? You don't understand? I shook my head. He explained the mad thing he meant to do. We'd never known where Xiao Hao went. How could we, unless he chose to tell us? Ecclesia was borderless global, a network nation that lived in interstices. He was at graduate school and living with his professor in Shangdu when he ran. Any trails he might have left behind were lost in the city's thick skein of lives. I imagined him in Mumbai, London, Sao Paulo, anywhere, everywhere. He did travel, from the Antarctic settlements to the Ivory Coast, but in the year since Yunhe drowned in ash, he'd spent most of his time in one place, an Ecclesia installation in the remote heights of the Appalachian Mountains. The facility had been established on the force of Xiao Hao's research proposal. He wanted to invent a nanite soil that could reclaim regions flooded by coal waste. Ecclesia threw their full weight behind him, even secured secondary support from the United Nations. The project was called Wise Earth. His team experimented in coal-drowned towns with names like Prosperity and Dante, places like Yunhe, where waste lakes had overflown or old mines had spilled out their guts. The first phase of the research was, at least according to Xiao, relatively straightforward, a matter of making each nanite convert the arsenic, lead, and thallium of an ash flood into yet another nanite. The second phase was more complicated. His machines could eat lakes of poison, but all they left behind was gray mechanical goop. The nanites needed to be both efficient self-replicators and functional molecules of soil, true earth on which communities could rebuild. The problem was that the soil isn't homogeneous. It's a messy, semi-random body of minerals and organics, solids and liquids, and even gases. Xiao couldn't just map each nanite to some generalized recipe for soil. Over the course of a long year, the Wise Earth team developed a replication algorithm, wherein each nanite dynamically scanned existing mineral and carbon concentrations, compared it to a fixed ideal, and transported the element that was most lacking from a place where it was overabundant, all while negotiating the task with a million other nanites. It was a programmer's nightmare, and Xiao still wasn't satisfied. He wanted his Earth to do more than reclaim. He wanted it to enrich. He altered the topsoil layer so that it could absorb, store, and root solar power. A portion of that energy would power the nanites' network functions once the initial rush of consumption was finished. The soil would be true soil, yes, but it would also serve as a massive solar power plant, communications hub, and computational substrate. "It's a community seed," he said. "All you have to do is plant it." I was silent for a long time. My heart pounded. I'd had no idea, no conception. This was even bigger than Yuni. Did he understand that? How could he risk his life on just one town? "Xiao," I said, "this is huge." "Yes," he shrugged. "We have to tell people. We have to tell them everything. Now." His nod was absurdly casual. "Sure, why not? Do you have some kind of town forum or feed?" he asked. "Some way to talk to everyone and little Yunhee at once?" "No," I stood up. "No, Xiaohao, no. You're thinking too small. This..." I waved the knife and struggled for words. "This is huge. If we get you out of here, can you do the thing? Plant the seed?" "The replicator key is in my Waimo." "And your Waimo is somewhere in Papa's house. Okay." The gears fell into place and began to turn. I paced a tight circuit around the cell, called up a notepad on my eyelid. "We can do this. I think we can do this. But it can't just be a little Yunhee thing. Do you understand? There aren't that many people here, and many of them don't like or trust you." Xiao scowled. "Good to hear." "No, listen. It doesn't matter. There's an entire city of refugees out there. Not all of them have tents to sleep in, and even those of us with flats are worried. The accumulators are rusting. Boats need repair. Fish are thin in the water. We need to invite everyone, Xiao, and make the place a colony of the city. A place where anyone can work and build a home. We send crops and power back here, sell any surplus to the cities nearby, and once Yunhee's built, we take your replicator key and start again somewhere else. Maybe fill in some waste lakes with land. Stop another flood before it happens." My brother's smile was wry. "That's what Ecclesia was afraid I'd do."
"What do you mean?"
"Give away the soil. They wanted me to monetize it. Or use it for leverage."
"And you'll oppose them?"
"Fuck, I might as well," he grinned. "They're already pissed off."
We drew up our declaration with a kind of intense mechanical efficiency, quibbling only once or twice over phrasings. We did not make promises. We were not grandiloquent. We told the people of the Make-Do City, my people, that an opportunity had arisen, and we explained it as thoroughly and as accurately as we could. We said that we didn't mean to abandon the city, but to bolster it. We said that our huts and boats and accumulators needed repair, and that a revived Yunhee would give us the resources we needed. The soil wouldn't solve all of our problems. There would be only so much energy, so much food, so much space. There would still be hard labor and hardship and sickness, but the earth of Yunhi could check the entropy, afford us new ways and means. The earth of Yunhi could hold us back from the edge. Finally, we asked people to join us, to save us, to assemble outside of the patient whale. That plea was the hardest thing to write and the most crucial, and we agonized over the wording. It didn't matter how many people we intrigued with our soil seed. If no one showed up, our plan was worthless. We tried to acknowledge the dangers of assembly without making the act seem revolutionary, and asked those unwilling or unable to show their faces to leave anonymous comments of support on our post. Comments, of course, were unlikely to save us. Xiao used the Wimo I'd received from Little Wuxie to record a video of me reading the declaration. I had enough credibility throughout the city that my image could lend weight to the message. Besides, vids always got more attention than text. When we were finished, Xiao Hao and I shared a wary, weary glance. My hands were clammy, and part of me wanted to collapse on the cell floor. The other part was so hyperactive that I doubted I'd sleep for days, no matter how our little sedition ended. Xiao nodded, and I uploaded both the transcript and the video, tagged so that they would appear on every feed in the city of broken places. And then we waited. We sat in silence, refreshing our feeds. We'd turned off our knives, and the bulb in the corridor had given out, so the cell was lit only by the moon-white light of the Wuxi Waimo. We watched the video's viewership slowly, slowly rise. Every minute that passed without a comment felt like a punch to the gut. The cell was sweltering, but I felt cold. This was it. The endgame. Either our plan worked or I went down with Xiao Hao. Would Papa really execute both of his children? Could he really keep so cool, so consistent? I worried the question until it was raw, tried to imagine what answer Papa would give if I asked him point blank. Finally, Xiao broke the silence. "What would Mother think?" he murmured. "When was the last time I'd thought about our mother? Papa never talked about her, and Xiao had been gone for so long." "I don't know," I said. "Sometimes, for a fleeting moment, I think I remember her. And then I realize that I'm thinking of some old vid or picture." He smiled sadly. "Yeah, I know. Wasn't really a question." He bit his lip and turned his attention back to the Waimo. She'd be just as pissed off as Father, maybe more so. They were two of a kind. He was only a few years older than me, but he claimed to remember so much more. Sometimes I suspected that Xiao had invented our mother. Sometimes I resented his stories. "Grandfather," I said, "I think he'd be proud."
"Yeah? Seriously?"
I rested my hand on Xiao's. His skin was clammy. "He'd be proud and he'd be pleased. He always cared more about his land and his family than, you know, whatever the rules are this week. You're bringing back the land and you're doing it for the family. He'd be proud." Xiao fixed his gaze pointedly on the Waimo. For a fleeting moment, I thought I saw a warbling of moisture in his eye. "Thank you," he said. And then, "Oh, shit."
"Oh, shit?"
He showed me. Comments were pouring in now, 10 at a time. Some were cynical, others supportive. Only a few were outright angry. Several of the supportive comments linked to another video, which showed indistinct figures gathering on a dock not far from the whale. Some of the figures
or security officers.
It's starting, said Xiao. The new video was a not-so-subtle message. We want a new Yunhe. We have muscle, and you can find us at this location. The sight of the security officers was both heartening and sick-making. We had muscle, yes, but now guns were in play. In all my fervor, I hadn't quite realized that things might get very bloody very quickly. Or maybe I understood, in a detached academic sense. But it hadn't really occurred to me that our side might have guns, too. More videos followed, similar declarations of support and instructions for assembly. The vids rarely showed faces, just quick, shaky shots of gathered bodies in some semi-distinctive landmark. My stomach roiled. My shirt was soaked. We waited. Finally, with no warning from the feeds, we heard footsteps on the stairs. More than one person, but not more than a handful. Xiao and I shared a glance. Neither of us turned on our knives. Three sets of boots cast echoes from the far end of the corridor. And all at once, the knotty storm of anxiety in my chest resolved into a liquid cool. This was it. The waiting was over. Whatever was going to happen would happen. An idiot grin spread over my face. I squeezed Xiao's hand, and he looked at me as if I'd gone mad. The three newcomers emerged into the light. Old Zhu walked with a slight limp, smiling a crooked smile. On either side of him was a security officer with an automatic rifle. I recognized one of the men from the little Yunhe border guard, the squad leader. I gave him a small nod, which he returned. Zhu arched an eyebrow, smiled even wider, and then opened his mouth.
There are some folks here to see you, he said.
Outside, an impossible thing stood on the dock, the largest gathering I'd ever seen. The city was always a sweaty press of bodies, of course, but this was a press with a purpose. People from every quarter, administrators, elderly tent squats, fishermen, gangly tattooed hoods, strained to see us as we emerged from the patient wail. Someone gave up a cheer as we appeared, and the cheer carried through the crowd. Again, Xiao and I shared a glance. I was still grinning. Xiao looked like someone had punched him in the gut. We walked down the long ramp from the ship to the shore and into the midst of our saviors. The crowd was eager but polite, standing back to make room, asking questions but not shouting or insisting. When it became clear that Xiao was too dumbfounded to speak, I raised my arms. The people around us hushed.
Thank you, I said. Thank you so much. I will always remember this. I will never be able to thank you enough for what you've done.
But I have to ask you to do one more brave thing. There was, I told the crowd, one last person we needed to persuade. I gave them his name and asked them to walk behind me. Then, with Xiao at my side, I started down the winding way between the tent quarter and the open market, up the hill and toward my father's house. The people of the city followed. We may have lost folks as we walked. We may have gained some, too. I didn't look back. Xiao leaned in and whispered,
"Sweet shit, Yuan."
After that, we were both silent. I guessed that Papa would come to meet us, and I was right. As we rounded into the final approach toward the hut, we sighted Papa and a squad of hard suits marching down the gravel path. I took a deep breath, bit my lip until I drew blood, and pulled the arc knife from my pocket. The security officers behind me rushed to my side, held their rifles at the ready. Pained expressions passed across their faces, but they raised their weapons and walked with me and did not waver. We had greater numbers and more guns, but there could still be blood. As we came closer, I saw the pistol in Papa's hand.
the emptiness in his eyes. His gray suit was stained with sweat, and there was uncertainty on the faces of his officers. I slowed, then stopped, and the crowd followed suit. Feet shifted on gravel. "Papa," I called. "Papa, please stand down."
"You know I can't do that, Yuen."
"We only want what's best for the city. It isn't sedition, it's renewal."
"It's not sedition." His voice was dead, monotone. "You want to activate Ecclesia technology brought here by a traitor and a legal agent within our borders. How is that not sedition?"
There was no force, no anger behind the words. He looked pale and deflated. The crowd at my back murmured. "Xiao Hao broke ties with the Ecclesia to bring us his soil. Don't you see?" I looked for the words, smiled when I found them. "Don't you see that he followed your example? You traveled into space to protect us, and we honored you for that."
"Everyone honors you."
"But Xiao went further. He left the country, and just like you, he came back triumphant."
More murmurs rose behind me and a few cheers. Papa was silent.
"Listen," I said, "we outnumber you. These people are from all over the city. You don't even have jurisdiction over most of them. If you ask those officers to fire on us, you break the law of the city and call chaos down on everyone's heads. All for nothing. You don't want that." He opened his mouth, closed it. Tears filled his eyes and his entire body slumped. The hard suits beside him began to lower their weapons.
"Mere anarchy,"
Papa said, barely audible.
"Mere anarchy is loosed."
And then he raised the pistol to his head.
"No!" shouted Xiao Hao.
The officer at Papa's side whipped around with incredible suit-augmented speed, slapped the gun from Papa's hand. No shot sounded, but Papa collapsed as if he'd pulled the trigger, and the officers around him struggled to hold him up. Xiao and I ran forward.
"He's alive," said the officer who bore most of his weight. "He fainted."
Xiao, stricken, reached out to touch his father's face. I doubted he would have reacted differently if Papa were dead. Tears ran down his flushed cheeks, and he squinted with the effort of holding tears back. Papa, for his part, looked peaceful. You might have mistaken the curl of his lips for a smile.
"Xiao," I said, "come on."
"We almost killed him," said Xiao Hao.
"We almost... I never meant..."
He trailed off. I touched his shoulder.
"I know," I said softly. "But we stopped him from having to kill us."
The sun bore down. The city watched us. Finally, I turned and began to march up the gravel road. After a moment, Xiao jogged to catch up. As we approached the hut, my Waimo asked if I wished to link to device Xieshe. I declined. The door was locked, but Quonset hut doors were only so strong.
"I think he wanted you to succeed," I said, activating the arc knife.
Xiao wiped his eyes with his wrist.
"Are you kidding?"
"No, I think he followed every protocol, but secretly hoped that you would succeed."
"What could possibly make you think that?"
"He kept your Waimo." Xiao's eyes moistened again. I slashed off the lock and kicked open the door. Cool air spilled out and a half dozen smart fans twisted around to regard us. Behind us, hundreds of feet scratched the gravel path, eager to join us, eager to walk on the earth of Yunhe. The new town wouldn't look like Xiao's sim. I knew that already. Parts of his fantasy world would persist into the real world, maybe,
but every single person who had saved us would have an idea about what the new Yunhee should look like, how it should work. I couldn't wait to hear what they had to say. I couldn't wait for the arguments, the compromises, the beautiful reality. We fell into our father's house and found the key. Ecclesia is social, networked, borderless, we've currency, weaponless, we've teeth, metanation creed, union in the interstices, all welcome. Eric Gregory. Thank you for listening to The Earth of Yunhee by Eric Gregory. Again, this is the opening story of Shine, the anthology of near-future optimistic science fiction, edited by Jetze de Vries and published by Solaris Books. Available March 30th, 2010. Please look for it wherever fine books are sold.